differences in the actual text are, they're all in, they don't differentiate between allusion and...
No, they don't actually. And you don't know what all those side references are. You just kind of, sometimes they're parallels in the same author, and, okay. You know, there are various usefulness and so forth, so... Yep, and the problem is you just have to look it all up, right? Which is good, because it makes you read the Bible. So, yeah. Good, well, welcome to Greek Club. We've been actually looking at some of the tools, appendices, and so forth in Nestle Aland, but we'll go ahead and turn to Genesis chapter 3. We are at verse 20, concerning which no one knows what it means, but everyone can translate it. So that's good. Since we're in Greek Club, we're more about language than getting all the exegetical insights. But last week we had 3:19, where Paul begins to ask this question, well, okay, if the law, or the works of the law, isn't for justification and it doesn't nullify the promise, well, why then did God give the law? And his answer is somewhat condensed, and often we wish Paul would have said more. But verse 20 in Galatians 3. We have in Greek, ha de mazites henas uk estin, ha de theas heis estin. Okay, thankfully, at least we have verbs. Now we have to decide what goes with what. You could translate the first clause probably one of two ways. You could say, now there is no mediator of one. In that case, you'd be taking the number henos, the genitive there, as modifying the mezites sort of directly. There is no mediator of one. The other way to take it, and I think it's often translated this way, is a mediator is not of one. In either case, what Paul, and then of course Paul follows with probably an allusion to the Shema, among other things, Hadethaos Hasistin, but God is one. Right? Now, what exactly does this mean? And the answer is, well, nobody's quite sure. But it seems to indicate that, okay, it's sort of a contrast, maybe something like this. The promises came directly from God to Abraham, but the law had to come through a mediator, that is, probably Moses. Right? And so, it may be a way for Paul to sort of suggest the superiority or maybe the primacy of the promise rather than the law. Okay, we've just seen in the verses before that the law came later, so it can't nullify the promise and so forth. I think Burton's commentary on Galatians, and this was written almost 100 years ago, he says something like this. There are 137 different interpretations of verse 20, and we will here summarize the major ones. You know, at this point, just sort of keep reading, right? And it's not actually, I don't think, crucial to the argument to understand precisely what Paul is saying here. But the Greek is obviously pretty easy. You don't see the noun mediator very often in the New Testament. And there is a verb, by the way, mesituo, which means to mediate or to act as mediator. I'm not sure that verb occurs in the New Testament.
Would you say maybe it's objective genitive or something?
Exactly. Like yeah. The mediator of one. There is no mediator of one. In other words, you don't mediate when there's just one person involved, right? Or something like that. Again, did I mention that there are apparently a lot of interpretations of this verse, which is why this is Greek Club, which means we move on to verse 21. Which is a little more complex. Ha'un namas kata ton epangeleon, perhaps tu theu, question. Megenoita, Paul's favorite little interjection there. Egar edathe namas ha denominas zoa poiesai antos ek namu an ein he dikaiosine. So you have to kind of parse carefully here. I think in the New Testament we often see kata, the preposition, followed by the accusative, which means what? Anybody remember normally?
According to, sometimes
even because or something like that. But with the genitive, as here, it means, anybody?
Down from, against.
Down from or against, very good, yeah. So therefore, and there's no verb in this first clause, is the law against the promises, and perhaps the promises of God? And the answer is, me genoita. Here's everybody's favorite optative form, right, from genomai. Just to review, this is all I actually keep in my head about the optative, that when, because it doesn't occur often in the New Testament compared to other writers' or writings, and it has to do with the distinction between whether or not on is there. If you have an optative in a main clause like this, but no on, it's a wish. So may something happen. If on is there, it translates like the apodosis of a future less vivid conditional sentence. A full example of which, Kevin, is why you're frowning at me, is not found in the New Testament. Future less vivid is a plus the optative, on plus the optative. And it's putting on a conditional where you rather think it won't happen. That's why it's called a future less vivid. So when you see that, you translate something like this, that X might happen. This is a wish. If you had on here, you would actually translate, it would actually radically change the meaning. It's the law against the promises of God. That might not happen. See? So we're all happy that there's no on here, right? But I mention that, of course, because we have one coming up in the next sentence, right? So you're tracking along, so may it never be, may it not happen. And then you see, oh, there's a conditional sentence. For if the law was given, and now we have law modified with an article and a participle, right? So which law? The one able, followed by the infinitive, from zoa poieo, which means to make alive, right? So if a law, the one able to make alive, was given. Now we're translating. We see unto, so that's an adverb. It means really or truly. By the law. And then we see our little friend on. And then the verb, which is ein. Right? Which is the imperfect of eime, right? And at this point, we know that we have what kind of a conditional sentence? With on in the second clause. A plus a past time indicative, on plus a past time indicative equals, anybody?
Haven't gotten that far yet.
Contrary to facts. This is a contrary to fact conditional sentence. It's a sort of a classical formulation of it. Again, A plus a past time indicative in the first clause, the prothesis. And then the second clause as on plus another past time indicative. And you can't translate it straight. You have to turn it into an English contrary effect conditional sentence. And so we translate, if a law had been given, if a law which was able to make alive had been given, but it wasn't, contrary effect, right? Truly, salvation would be, from Amy, ek namu, by the law. But it's not. Again, it's a Greek idiom, and then you have to translate it into the English idiom, so to speak. Once you get that figured out, then we have to figure out, oh yeah, how do I say that in English, right? But it truly is not a literal translation because it's idiomatic in both Greek and in English. So here we see that from Paul's point of view, the law, understood again primarily as the commandments, right, is not able to make alive, and righteousness is not by the law, which of course he has been sort of repeatedly teaching us. Questions, comments about verse 21? Anything?
There are 72 operatives in the New Testament.
There are 72 operatives in the New Testament.
Plus or minus three.
Excellent. Plus or minus three. Yeah. Yeah, there aren't that many. Paul likes this little expression, you know, may it never be. Luke X has quite a few. Luke is a little bit more of an elegant writer. And by the way, Dr. Veltz's book, Fundamental, as I like to call it, Not So Fundamental Greek Grammar, the latter chapters where students stop learning because they're studying for the qualifier, you know how that goes? He actually has some nice discussions of different uses of the optative. Like, I love this one, the optative of indirect discourse after a main verb of second, a main secondary tense verb of reporting. Oh, and this actually does occur a couple times in Luke, I think. So, and it happens just to keep us all humble, which is in general a good thing. So, but you do see quite a few contrary effect conditional sentences in the New Testament.
For the other ne geneta, is it genoita, like the optative, or is it just the ne geneta? When other times, when it's like heaven forbid.
It's always this form.
It is.
Yeah. Yep. I think so. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And again, you can see it's from and this would be the aorist optative because you can see the gen stem. It's not indicative, which is why there's no temporal augment, right? And you see the oi, which is actually the connecting vowel of the, at least the strong aorist optative. There's a couple of funky forms in 1 Thessalonians, actually, that look like infinitives, but they're actually optatives. So that'll teach you to stay away from 1 Thessalonians. Right, till Dr. Geishan's commentary comes out or something. So. Good. All right. Moving in, then, verse 22. Here we have the alternative, Allah, right, the strong adversative. So, Allah sin ekklesen he graphe tapanta hippa hamartean hina he ep angelia ek pistaos Jesu Christu dothe tois pistu uzim. Rather, so what was the law for? Well, it wasn't to make alive. Rather, and here we probably have to think that he graphe, scripture, is kind of being paralleled to law. Okay, just because of the context. The verb syn ekklesen is from sug kleo, or kleo as we also pronounce it. So sigma upsilon gamma. But once you put the temporal augment in between the preposition sun and the main stem of the verb, it goes from sug to sun. Okay. We'll actually see that. In fact, drop your eye down 1, 2, 3, 4 lines. See the form sug kleomenoi? It's from the same verb, right? But the spelling gets changed when you put the temporal augment in between the prefixed preposition and the main stem. And this is just a weak aorist indicative. And it means to lock up together. Kleo means to lock up. A klase is a key. Okay. But the scripture locked up together, tapanta, all things, under sin, hippa hamartian, and it had a purpose in doing that. In order that, the promise, and now we have to decide, what does ek pistos Jesu Christu go with? Does it modify promise, or does it modify the verb dothe? And since the verb is in a hina clause, we know that it's what mood?
Subjunctive.
It's a subjunctive, very good. And what's it from? Anybody? What's a dictionary form? Ditto me.
Right.
Right. Whenever you see a little delta word and it's got an O sound of some sort in it, just guess ditto me. That's right. Right. This is, oddly enough, it's the aorist subjunctive passive. You guys know that the way to victory, like the way to eschatological victory for the me verbs, is to just memorize the principal parts and then pray. Say tithe me, ditto me, histe me. Just memorize the principal parts. So the sixth principal part of ditto me, anybody? Edothane, PhD student, good man. Yeah. You can actually, if you want to be Lutheran memorization for ditto me, you ready? Dido mi dozo edo ka, dido ka de da maya da sane. Dr. Art Eichhorn taught us that in elementary groups. Yeah. Aorist subjunctive passive, third person singular. In order that the promise might be given by faith in Jesus Christ, or is it the promise by faith in Jesus Christ might be given? And then the indirect object would be to the believing ones, to those who believe. We haven't seen the phrase faith of Jesus recently, so just remember that there is that debate. Is this a subjective genitive or an objective genitive? That is to say, is it faith in Jesus, or is it Jesus' faithfulness? Dogmatically, either one works. It's just a question of what's more likely exegetically. And I think most of the people around here go with the objective genitive. But again, there's nothing... It could be the other way around. I just don't think that the argument is as strong. But smart people are convinced on either way. And you can certainly be a sort of stand-up confessional Lutheran and hold to either position. It's not a dogmatic issue. It's an exegetical one. So as I like to say with Stephen Westerholm, I have no objections to the subjective reading other than that it's wrong. So we'll take it as faith in Jesus Christ to those who believe. I mean, there's tons of interesting and important theology here, including coming up the role of the law as pedagogue. I mean, this is great. But at least the Greek here is not too hard. Main clause, the scripture locked together all things for a purpose, in order that the promise might be given to those who believe. Right? Okay? Good. Anything at all? Any questions? Morphology? Reality? Truth? Okay, good.
If you do take it, pistis to modify then the verb there or the promise? Is that what you said?
I think it's probably modifying the verb. Yeah, since it's right in front of it. It would be nice if you wanted to modify the noun, you could repeat the article, right? The promise, the by faith in Jesus Christ one. But it could go either way. So, okay, good. We'll plunge into the next paragraph. We have an articular infinitive here after a preposition. This is Veltz chapter 17, I think. This one doesn't occur all that often. Pra is the infinitive, but you do see it from time to time. So we've got verse 23. Pra tu de elthein tain piston hippa naman e frurumitha sin kleamanoi eis tain melusan piston apokalifthenai dot dot dot. The subject of the infinitive, anybody, would be what? Good. Faith. Remember that when an infinitive has its own subject, it's in the accusative case, right? So if you want to do this really woodenly, you could say, before the action of faith coming. And more easily in English, of course, before faith came. Before perhaps the faith came. And so the articular infinitive here after pra is acting like a dependent clause, a temporal clause. So before faith came, under law, ephrurumatha, this is from frureo, it means to guard, okay? And it would parse, you can see it's got the present stem, frureo, and then you get the vowel contraction because it's an epsilon contract, it results in the u. Temporal augment, so it's not an aorist indicative, it's an imperfect indicative. Very good. We were being guarded. And then the participle, synkleamanoi, which is, you can see the menoi ending, so it's either middle but probably passive, and it's masculine plural nominative. And the referent, as is very often, is the implied subject. It's the we in the main verb, which if it were there, would be masculine plural nominative. Right? So perhaps take it as manner. We were being guarded by being locked together, picking up the statement of the prior verse. Now we have an ace, a very long or fairly long ace phrase, unto the about to be faith to be revealed. Literally. Remember that mellow for you Texans in the crowd means to about to do something or fix into, right? So, and the participle there, melusan, is feminine singular accusative. It's in attributive position, right? Between tain and piston. So it's adjectival, modifying faith. Which faith? And you link melusan with the infinitive apokalypthenai, which is from apokalypto, which means to listen to reggae music. It means to reveal. Okay, like up the apocalypse, right? So, and this is aorist infinitive passive, thenai, right? And so what faith? The about to be revealed faith. All that modifies faith. Okay? Very similar expression, by the way, in Romans 8 that we just heard last Sunday, or two Sundays ago. The about to be revealed glory. Okay? Very similar.
Why isn't the infinitive with melusan in the attributive position?
Mm-hmm. Because Greek word order is satanic. Yeah. No, it could be in the attributive, in the sandwich. Certainly could be, Brian, and it just makes it a little more awkward for us. So, okay, so to clean up the whole mess there, then before faith came, we were being guarded under the law as we were locked together, or by being locked together, unto, or toward the goal of, the faith which was about to be revealed. And then we have a hosta clause, which we can kind of finish off fairly quickly. Hosta in the New Testament very often expresses, anybody? Result. Very good. Very good. With the result that the law, hanamas, paid agogas hemon geganon. The law has become our pedagogue, custodian, tutor, babysitter. The pedagogue is essentially a positive figure in the ancient world. See? It's not a cruel taskmaster in the sense of an evil person. It's someone that makes you do stuff you don't want to do, but takes care of you and kind of keeps you in line. Okay, that's the pedagogue. And the theology here is overwhelming, and we won't get into it. Gegonen is perfect from ginomai, indicative, active, third, singular, with the result that the law has become the pedagogue of us, unto Christ, right? Leading us to Christ. Purpose, in order that, by faith, we may be justified. From Dikaiyao. And that's actually not a bad place to stop. By stopping here at verse 24, we're stopping at the turning point of salvation history. Because Paul's next statement is, now that faith has come, we are no longer under a pedagogue. So, and we'll pick up there next week. Oh, are we meeting next week? No classes. I'm gone next week.
Don't do that.
I'm not. That's right. Greek student. Yeah. And Hebrew. You guys are continuing. Let's not meet. Greek club will not meet until classes resume. Okay? So all you faithful listeners out there, if there are any of you, we'll see you again in September. So until then, Irene, shalom, etc.
We'll see you in September.
See you in September.